You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
God rest Eddie Van Halen. It is another edition of the Massive Report podcast. I'm Brian. Ori's here. Bart's here. Murph's here. Tom is here. Welcome, Tom. Tom, writer of MassReport.com.
Welcome. Thanks, guys. Nice to be on.
Do you have chaos in your home that we should be aware of?
I have a small child in my home, so.
So you have chaos.
Yes, I have chaos. And do the best we can to kind of sequester the chaos. But yeah, have a two-year-old running around.
All right, Tom. Well, thanks for joining us. And don't worry about it at all. Just, I might have a few questions for him later. It's entirely possible. He could probably explain Ted Uncle better than any of us. But we'll get to Ted here in a moment. The Crew go to Dallas and draw 2-2. Before we get into the X's and O's and the formations and so forth, kind of a macro question, because teams do have to go on the road, and we've gotten a lot of questions about this. Are the Crew, like a lot of clubs, not particularly good on the road right now? Is this something that you guys worry about? I haven't thought too much about it because most of the places we play, there's nobody there or very few people there. But the travel itself is kind of a pain, is it not? So is this a thing? Ori, is this a thing?
I think it is a thing. And I'm looking down right now because I want to look and see MLS soccer standings, if they have a home and away split, because when I was looking up FC Dallas, I noticed they also, you know, haven't lost at home, and most of their struggles have also been on the road. And for the Columbus Crew, they haven't won a true road game for all of 2020. The only wins not at MAPFRA Stadium were in Florida for MLS's back. Now, while that could be seen as an away game, they arrived early, they were staying there. It became home for every team in MLS that played in that tournament. Obviously, Dallas didn't play in that tournament, so they didn't get to experience it. But I think the road form is a concern. You know, this is the October gauntlet, as I'm going to call it. Columbus is playing a game every 3 or 4 days, all the way up until the 18th of the month. And if you want to maintain your spot in first place, stay in that top three, especially with a big game against Orlando coming up on Sunday, they got to be able to get points on the road. And not just ties, they need to get wins, because 3 points will enable them to push up into that number one spot. And assuming the playoffs are played in home markets, they'll host all those games in the Eastern Conference. So I do think the road form is a concern, and I think the factors are – I do think that the day of travel is tough. And at the same time, you got to think of fatigue. You know, this team in their 25-year history probably have never had a stretch of games like this, playing every day, every other 3-4 days for the span of 2-3 weeks. And it's been like this since basically August.
Patrick, how is the road routine different for those that don't know from previous seasons?
Yeah, it's definitely different. Now, it's changed a little bit since this new part of the phase two restart, which we're now a couple games into. You know, what they're trying to do to avoid any sort of exposure, limit teams being in hotels, is fly in when possible on the day of, or, you know, if it's close enough, like a Cincinnati, you bus down and then fly out the night of the game. And while that doesn't sound terrible, when you're a professional athlete, you're used to a routine. You're used to how game day goes. You know, you get up at a certain time, home or away. You go through kind of the motions of the day that have your body clock ready to play at a certain time. Now, I'm not saying that has been a factor in every game, or that's even something necessarily to blame, because let's be honest, every team is dealing with this. So, you know, the Crew have been clear. They're not making excuses about anything, but I do think it's something to consider. Or you said you were looking to see if there's standings.
Yeah,
or what standings say.
Yeah, I'm trying to find a standing site that can filter between home and away, because I'm really curious to find
out. Officially 2-4-2 on the road, but those two wins came in Orlando, as you mentioned. So 0-4-2 on the road, The four being the draws, obviously, the two losses being at New York City and the Toronto game, which technically was a road game, even though it wasn't at BMO Field. In terms of, and I have been asked about this a few times, which is why I wanted us to bring it up. I think it's a concern to some degree, because as you mentioned, Brian, you're not playing in packed stadiums, you know, so you're not dealing with the crowds and the normal atmospheres and whatnot. Now you are dealing with the travel, which is something to consider, but you know, this team doesn't play in a way, you know, it's not like they're changing tactically too much when they go on the road or whatnot. So it is confusing to me that as good as they've been at home, you know, not allowing goals, obviously scoring, getting wins, they're 7-0 at home, that hasn't translated more on the road. Now, MLS is weird, and road home splits tend to be higher in MLS than they are in a lot of leagues, just historically. But I mean, you look at a team like Toronto, who is now tied with the Crew on points at the top of the East in the Supporters Shield standings. They're 4-2-1 on the road. Now, I don't know exactly how their MLS's back group stage games played out. Maybe they had more or less road games. I'm not sure. But you know, four wins on the road is a good amount at this point in the season, 15 games through. So the Crew do need to certainly start getting results on the road, because, as you mentioned, Ori, if they want that top seed where then they don't have to play on the road when they get to the playoffs, which would be ideal, then you need to get some road wins in order to get there. Now, you know, especially that you've kind of let Toronto back into this thing. And a couple teams are right there. Orlando's at 29 points. You're going to see them on the road next weekend, and we'll talk about that. Philadelphia, who they're going to see down the road, is at 28 points. So, you know, the Crew had a nice little cushion here, but the road form has caused them to dip a little bit. And, you know, this isn't a bad super negative thing. They just got a nice road point, but you need to get some wins on the road at some point.
Yeah, and I did just find a table from footystats.org that breaks it down between home and away. So there's only two teams in MLS that are completely undefeated at home, but that's Orlando and Columbus. So they're playing on Sunday at Exploria Stadium in Florida, so that'll be interesting. But ooh, I'm seeing a lot of ones and twos in the loss column for the home teams, but then I'm looking on the road, and there's only two teams in the league that only have one loss on the road. That's Portland and Toronto. Now, Minnesota is the second best team on the road in MLS, but they've lost five games on the road. They have four draws and four losses, though, because they've played 13 games on the road. My assumption is they're counting MLS's back into this, but they bring up some numbers, and it says that home win percentage in MLS is 43%, and that all of this summarized means that home teams in MLS, on average, are performing 20% better at home. Now, the question is, do we think this is above average to a normal season?
Yeah, I don't know. There's so much that's off the rails as far as this season for all the clubs. I don't know that we should read too much into it. I think the sample size is still too small. Now, the good news is, it's kind of crazy to think, I'm just looking at the table, and we've surrendered five goals in the last two games, and we've still only surrendered 10, and we're still second in the league in goal differential. However, there appears to be some cracks in the facade, which in the first half anyway, I would assume that the 4-1-4 was taking an opportunity to rethink what they were doing. Bart, what did you see in the first half that you liked and did not like about this different formation that they abandoned after Zella Ryan had to leave the game with another injury?
I was, you know, when it came out, I was pretty intrigued. I think this was Caleb Porter trying to find a way to put his best players on the field for this game, and just make room for them. And they put Arthur in a position that, you know, I think on paper didn't necessarily reflect really how they ended up playing out there. I think Pedro, it looked to me like he was playing in more of a traditional eight position than, you know, having kind of two attacking midfielders. But that's also just because Pedro, we're so used to those, you know, that strong two-way game that he brings to this team defensively as well, just following up in his marking. They created some chances early. Josh Williams which I nearly called if it had gone through. Although, again, that coming
yes,
off
you
the
did.
Set piece.
I thought of you.
but I think he did, it just looked like that, you know, by himself there, Arthur was a little bit, you're just a bit outmanned. And you saw this Dallas team on the counter, what they were able to do. I think it was, you know, concerning that goal that they let up. And I think just what we've seen is that this Crew team, where they have been struggling here defensively, it has been on the counterattack in these last couple games, and even going back to those that game in Chicago. So I think that is definitely an area for concern. And then obviously, you know, when you're dealing with that, and then you add in the Ted Uncle variable playing on the road where you already struggle, it is not a recipe for success.
Tom, we left the goal that that Bart just referenced, the Barrios goal in the 37th minute. He was like, this is like youth soccer stuff where they just left this guy completely alone in the back post. It was embarrassing how not marked he was. Do you have any sense of where the breakdown was?
Yeah, I think, you know, you're right. It's kind of defending 101 there in terms of trying to make sure you're putting yourself in a position to look behind you. You know, I think that was the key problem is just trying to find the appropriate, you know, spacing and, you know, it's just weird to be able to give away something so easy like that. You ended up seeing that, you know, in the Premier League this past weekend with the two games that were very high scoring, the 6-1 and the 7-2, where you had.
We don't talk about that 6-1 game.
Ah! We don't talk about that 7-2 game.
I saw
either.
That score. I'm like, what? Both of them.
Pat and I are miserable.
But, well, as an Everton fan, it's always nice to see.
Tom, you're not allowed back.
Thanks for coming, Tom.
You know. But you know, it's one of those things where it's a basic thing, and I don't think it's a case of poor coaching. Obviously, I think Caleb, you know, is going to tell people, you know, that's kind of basic defending there, and as to why you're going to leave somebody that far wide open on the back post, I have no idea.
Well, obviously, you don't want to do that, and the irony is that Bakhtar's goal, you could say the same thing about how open he was. You know, he had time to think about it as well. Murphy, if you had a chance to talk to any of the players or the coach after the game, and had they any thoughts about running that formation out there, and what they thought of it, and what they thought of the goal that they gave up? I mean, let's leave the PK aside for a moment, but that can't happen at that Barrios goal.
As a matter of fact, we talked to players yesterday, and. The formation, I talked to Caleb, I asked Caleb a few questions about it because I was just curious about the decision behind it and, you know, what they wanted to do. He wasn't happy with the first half performance in general. He didn't think that they were strong enough in tackles and controlled the way they wanted to. Obviously, you know, when you switch to that look, Bart said that, and rightfully so, that, you know, Pedro Santos wasn't as high as they probably would have liked. And I think that had to do with the way Dallas was playing a little bit. Dallas did something a little different as well. But the idea was to, you know, get more control in the midfield where without Darlington Nagbe, they've kind of struggled a little bit. And yes, it did leave Artur a little bit more on his own. You know, he wasn't able to drop back into the defensive line as much because he had to kind of be the destroyer in the midfield. I think the goal in and of itself is just, you know, Harrison Offal has to be better. You know, you just have to be aware, you know, Luis Diaz could probably help a little bit as well. He's kind of standing. But that just has to, you know, you have to be cleaner. And this team has been very good, you know, at not making those mistakes this year. So I don't think we need to put too much on that one mistake, but I think it certainly can be better. I am interested to see if they, you know, while Nagbe remains out and whatnot, now without Lucas El Rayan, maybe they don't go to this as much, but I do like the idea of a plan B formation, which has been a long cry from Crew fans going back to Greg Berhalter. What happens when you can't play the 4-3-2-1? So I was interested in it. It's unfortunate that they weren't able to, you know, run it out for longer so we could get a little bit better sense of how that might be used, but at least it gives teams a little bit something to think about going forward. And really it's just how they attack. They still kind of sat defensively in a 4-4-2. So I'll be interested to see if they use it more.
Ori, there were times in the match when I noticed that Dallas was pressing so high that they were almost in our goal. I mean, it was, they were all in at points in the match where they were leaving the field so stretched. And I felt like we sort of left some opportunities to counter off of that, kind of begging, didn't we? Because there had to be so much space.
Yeah, I think the high press can work against the Crew. And I do think the one thing we're starting to see from teams now is they're starting to figure out Columbus a little bit. You know, they have a lot more film to study how they're going to play. And obviously this was a more experimental formation from Caleb Porter because he didn't have Fatai Alashe or Darlington Nagbe to really put into that central midfielder. He could have put in Sebastian Berhalter or Aiden Morris at the start if he wanted to stick with the 4-2-3-1, but he decided to go with the 4-1-4-1. I thought that was an interesting idea. But I think overall, the high press can work against this team, especially when they don't have their top 11. And that's the thing. We've seen a couple of games where the Crew have had their best starting 11 out there. And to me, those are the games where they've looked their best. When you have Nagbe and Artur playing together, when you have Zellerayan in the middle with Santos on the wing with either Mukhtar or a Diaz, Zardes up top. So it's really the midfield and the attacking midfield where we haven't seen, you know, the top 11 so much this season, because I think the fatigue is coming into play and we're seeing guys get injured, not super long-term injuries. We'll have to see with Zellerayan. Caleb Porter said it was a high hamstring injury and it didn't look good Dallas game. It didn't. He's probably going, I would expect Zellerayan, based on the pain he was suffering and what was told from us yesterday, that he might be out for maybe the rest of the regular season, maybe comes back in November for the last two home games against Philadelphia and Atlanta for maybe a final push for home field advantage or something. But I thought it wasn't the best game. I thought the first half wasn't too great, but the fight back in the second half was good. But again, the officiating was in question as well.
It's Ted Uncle. That guy is a disgrace. The penalty kick, my first, and you know, I'm looking through my yellow colored glasses, but it was an awkward play to be sure. And at your first glance, you're thinking, well, Harrison, why did you do that? Why did you jump into him? But clearly, you look at it again, and he backed into him. Did he not? Am I missing something here? Was that the right call, and I'm just being unfair to Ted Uncle because I don't like him?
I mean, I think Harry, you know, again, he probably went in there a little bit more aggressive than is maybe advisable when you're in the box. But there's no doubt that he's making an effort at that ball. And Barrios, yes, you know, I mean, he's not going to win too many balls in the box short of Harrison defending
four.
Anyway. And he made no effort. He made absolutely no effort. It was a cheeky play on his part. And I don't think that Ted Uncle has the, after calling the penalty, I don't think he has the humility to admit he's wrong on something like that. And
now refresh my memory, guys. Tom, maybe you could speak to this. Can Ted look at that and take the red card away? Can he do that? Because I get so confused about what's reviewable and what's not. Can anyone speak to that? Tom, I'll give it to you first.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's one of those calls, as you watch it over and over again, is the intent, I guess, is one of the things that I think Bart had talked about too, is you know, you've got Harrison is clearly looking at the ball when you look at it, you know, a couple different times there. And I think it's a VAR thing, but I'm with you too. It's one of those things that I don't fully understand what they can take a look at. But I mean, to me, it looks like something that should be, you know, reviewable if you want to. It just depends on what he sees.
Yeah, it's game changing. And he was so sure of himself. That's what drives me nuts about this guy. Oftentimes the worst officials in MLS are the guys that look like they're as sure of themselves as anything, you know?
Yeah. He really gave that, yeah, he gave that a big point, you know, right away.
He loves it.
And this team, and Caleb Porter in particular, has had some issues with Ted Uncle recently. And, I mean, you know, since Caleb Porter came to Columbus, and I think many teams could say they've had issues with Ted Uncle, so I don't think this is just a Crew problem. The penalty kick to me was, I mean, it's definitely reviewable. All penalty kicks are able to go to VAR. And I don't know if they checked with him and or he checked and they said, you got it right, or what happened there. But the one that stood out to me more so was the offside goal that I believe, it was Zardes.
It was really close.
Yeah, and to me, you know, I know that they've tried, especially, you know, we brought up the English Premier League earlier, so we can go back there for a second. You know, with them, they're, you know, drawing lines on the field and all this stuff to get it as accurate as possible. To me, VAR is there to go back and make sure there wasn't a clear and obvious error. That was those were the words that were used originally when it came into being. And there was no camera angle. While I think Diaz might have been an inch or so past the last defender, there was no camera angle that showed it. And there were football lines on that field.
The camera angles were terrible. And I got why it could have been called by the linesman offside. Right. But what I didn't get was after Ted looked at it, that he could be so definitive as to it being offside, because he just did not have, in my eyes, a good angle. But again, he's so sure of himself. He's so annoying. And then he yellow cards Room for not getting on the line fast enough, which is just, that made me madder. I don't know about you guys, that made me madder. It's like, what the hell, dude?
The crazy thing with what Room is trying to do there is because goalkeepers naturally step forward on penalty kicks, and that's what they've really tried to crack down on. You've seen it across the world over the last year or so, is plays getting retaken. We obviously saw it in Seattle, you know, way back pre-COVID times, if you want to call it that. But when Room had got called for it, and they retook the penalty kick after he saved it. So what he's doing is standing behind the line so that when he does step up, right before it's taken, so he can push off on the line. And
is that illegal? Does anyone know?
I don't know. And I asked one of my friends who is a goalkeeper, but he, you know, hasn't played at that level, and he didn't think it was illegal. But I think what the rule says is you have to be on the line when the ball is kicked. Now, if that also you interpret that as you have to be on the line during this whole process, I guess that's one thing. But my understanding of the rule is you have to have your foot on the line when the ball is kicked, and what Room was trying to do would have allowed him to do that. And, you know, if Ted Uncle wants to tell, if they want to have a conversation real quick, that's fine. I don't know why he felt the need to, you know, the Crew weren't winning the game. This wasn't late in the match. That one too, it just was unnecessary. You know, clearly Aloy wasn't trying to delay the game. I mean, there'd be no point in doing that right then. So I don't know what happened there.
To play devil's advocate here, it could potentially be that Uncle had given Room the warning of, hey, you can't step forward into the line. We're trying to crack down on this. Stay on the line as the penalty is being taken. Room could have refused, could have said, why? This is what I do. And might have been, you know, given him attitude. And maybe that's why he pulled the yellow. And we don't know. We don't know what that interaction was like. But VAR in general has been nothing short of a mess. Because clear and obvious is not a toe offside. I'm sorry. The naked eye can't.
It didn't used to be that way.
I know.
I played forward growing up. And you got – and granted, I didn't play on this level. But I remember in high school soccer, you know, it's like, they're going to give the benefit of the doubt to the attacking player.
I always give the benefit of the doubt to the attacker if they're even or maybe a half a toe is offside. Because I can't tell using my naked eye. And when VAR has been, you know, established in football, the biggest thing to me that I've seen from it, first of all, I believe that they should do it like the NFL. Enact a challenge system for penalties and red cards, because then it's not willy-nilly, let's just review what there is to review, because we're seeing inconsistencies.
Yes.
But at the same time, VAR is proving more and more how subjective the rules of soccer are, because some refs will take letter of the law. If his toe is offside, he can score with his toe, he's offside. If he can score with his shoulder and his shoulder is offside, he's offside. Some people will be like, that's okay. Same with red cards. How much of a violent tackle will a ref believe is a red card or a yellow? And the thing that's crazy is the only objective rules in the sport when a ball goes out of bounds to determine who it went off of, or if it's a corner or throw-in, they don't review that.
Right.
So VAR right. has so many problems, and MLS is not doing any favors not having the amount of camera angles that the Premier League has. I don't know if that's a money thing or it's a referee. I have no idea, but there needs to be a fix from FIFA to make this more consistent, because in every game in world football, when VAR is a talking point, all people can talk about is VAR. World Cup, Women's World Cup, MLS, Premier League, Champions League, everything.
Yeah, Bart, I agree with Ori there that we need to have an NFL system where it leave the challenge to the bench, and if you're wrong, there's some sort of penalty. I think that's fair. You lose, I don't know. Yeah. We got to figure something out, because we're getting down to where we're just splitting hairs with this stuff. And that's not what it was intended to do. And I don't know. When you have officials that look at the video evidence and still can't figure it out, right, then there's a problem with the officials. And this goes back to the genesis of the league, where the officials have always been terrible to varying degrees. And Ted Elkel is one of the worst examples. And then he yellow cards Caleb, too, just to jam it to us more. I mean, he's a grandstander. He's like an umpire in baseball that's just like talking to the dugout, you know, trying to stir people up. That's what he's trying to do. Mm-hmm.
And he interfered with Josh Williams on a break going back, Keith Noss pointed out, you know, just running back and got in Josh's way. Didn't, you know, lead to a goal. But I did just at least, you know, for my own sanity, to make sure it just isn't a Columbus Crew thing. And I just search on Twitter, Ted Uncle's name, and not only is it Crew fans going in him, but Orlando, who apparently has never won a game that he has reffed, New York, NYCFC fans are livid about this guy, Atlanta fans. So he's really uniting the Eastern Conference. And again, that, you know, I think some people would say, oh, well, if he's making all the fan bases mad, he must just be doing his job right. And I think people that have minds, you know, more developed than children can say, no, that just means he's bad at it.
Well, I don't want to talk about Ted Uncle anymore. He just makes me so angry. You know, one guy that we have not mentioned, and I thought he was really good when Zellerion went out with his injury, was Aiden Morris. I thought that he stepped right in and did a great job and looked very confident to me. Pat, did you have a chance to ask anybody or talk to Aiden or ask about Aiden? What did you see out there?
Aiden talked after the match, but I unfortunately was not on the post game, because I had a wedding.
Congratulations.
It wasn't mine, and I didn't want to be there. But, yeah, I think he's been – you know, we talked about Sebastian Berhalter for a few episodes earlier, and I think Aiden Morris has looked good recently. I think, you know, he came in, obviously, in the second half against Toronto and had that one slide tackle that wasn't great. But for the most part, I thought was fine. You know, however many minutes he played there. And then obviously this second half, going back to the 4-2-3-1, you know, really helped the Crew kind of reshape themselves back into what they're used to. And then he had a couple of really nice moments. The one in particular that stood out to me was when he ran, you know, made a run into the box with the ball. It's kind of on the left side of the goal. And I think Jordan Angeli in the broadcast brought it up on the replay. But just, you know, a rookie out there kind of taking charge, you know, in a tight game like that. Especially coming out of the midfield, you know, you don't often see Artur and Nagby making deep runs into the box. You know, I like that. I liked his attitude. You know, we've talked to him a couple times since the season began, and he's a confident kid. Had a really good 1 year at Indiana last year. Obviously played well with the Crew Academy growing up. So, you know, I think they've got a very interesting duo in Sebastian Berhalter and Aiden Morris. You know, they are rookies. They're going to make mistakes, as we talked about with Berhalter. But, you know, they're getting experience this year, which is a positive going forward. Obviously, you'd love to have Nagby and Artur out there every game. But, I think he's been a positive these last couple games.
And, Tom, he looks like Rudy, does he not? looks like
three. He does. He's got a little bit of that get the golden domer kind of thing going on. And then, yeah, no, definitely I would agree with that.
Well, I thought he looked good. And then
Rooney wishes he had that hairline.
Yeah. I mean, the hair is incredible. Tom, anytime a coach pulls the trigger on a sub at exactly the right time, he's brilliant. And Derek Ntien is on the pitch no more than just a few seconds and makes a difference in the tying goal that we needed. That guy is just every time he's on the field, I get more and more intrigued as to his ultimate potential.
Yeah, I think it's another example of I mean, I've been excited about him ever since he was signed. Being up here, I live in upstate New York, so I've got a bunch of friends who just can't stop talking about the Red Bulls, unfortunately. I have to listen to them talk about them.
Wow, what could they have to talk about?
Exactly. Well, I mean, it's a lot of sad conversations. Okay, and I, gotcha. But they really liked him when he was playing for the Red Bulls, and then the preseason, you know, making that great first start that he did in preseason for the Crew, you know, he is a game changer. I think you're right. I think, I mean, when you think of an impact sub for this team, he's the kind of guy that I love to see any team have, because he can get on the field and he can just burn people. He can just go up and down the field and go by anybody pretty much in this league. So he's just somebody that as the season goes on and his legs get more and more tired, especially as we talked about earlier with this compressed schedule, you want to have people who just have that pace and that ability. And if he can continue to make an impact on the team in terms of creating chances, then it's an added bonus, and the more weapons you can bring off the bench or have to start to replace injured players is fantastic.
All right, so let's get ready to leave Dallas behind. But
can we quick though touch on Emmanuel Boateng coming off on the bench? I thought he had a really it was really encouraging performance from him. I just in, you know, about 30, 35 minutes or so of play, three key passes, completed 92% of his passes in the game. I thought he was a real big and a guy that we haven't seen a whole lot of yet. And coming on at a little bit of a surprising time, I thought, for Yunus Mukhtar, who was arguably Crew's, you know, most impactful player in that first half. So I thought that Boateng was a really encouraging, really, I mean, and even Tarbell strong coming off the bench. If there's a silver lining, I think, to get in this is the subs as they came on in those performances, even with the injuries, I thought they all played strongly. It is an encouraging sign for the depth, as again, it's obviously going to be stretched during this next span too.
That's an excellent point. And Tarbell is just a guy. I told my wife, we were watching the game together, I go, I just feel good about this guy being at the ready. It was a weird injury, and I thought Room was going to stay in the match. So let's, before we leave Dallas behind, let's segue to injuries, because this seems to be, and I guess every club's going to deal with this. The elephant in the room is El Arian, and then we'll get to Room and any other injuries we might have. And, of course, Nagby. What's the timetable for him? Zell Arion, we kind of touched on that already. Patrick, just kind of put a bow on that. Are we really thinking that it's going to be the playoffs before we get him back at this point?
I don't know. And that's the unfortunate thing is we, you know, like I said, we talked to Caleb on Monday. The two players were getting a scan Monday afternoon, so they were going to know more information then. This is the unfortunate part of this. Sorry, let me just rephrase that. This is one of many unfortunate parts of this year, is that not being allowed to go to training every day, we can't get consistent updates on injuries, and because of the way MLS has reshaped its injury report, all they have to do is put not medically cleared. And uh-huh. Zellerian obviously was listed on that, but that doesn't give us any indication of what the injury was or how long he'll be out. So we'll get more information after the game tomorrow. You know, that will certainly be something to come up with from Caleb Porter, or he kind of detailed earlier what he said about Zellerian, but without having, you know, much more information than that, it's tough to say. The good news of that is that, or from that update, was that it doesn't sound like we're going to miss Eloy Room very long in the Crew lineup, if at all. Porter said, you know, left the door open basically for him to potentially play on Wednesday. And even if he misses Wednesday's match, it doesn't sound like it'll be longer than that. And like you said, it was a weird injury. You know, he walked off fine. I think it was just, you know, precautionary. And they trust Andrew Tarbell. Let's be clear about that. So, you know, positive there. Zellerjan, obviously, a loss anytime he's not in the lineup. And with Nagby, I think you're getting towards the end of this. You know, we were originally told a couple, maybe 3 weeks, and you're now at the end of that timetable, which is what we discussed last week. So depending on how things have gone in training, and again, unfortunate we're not there to kind of see what he's doing. I know he started to do some activity last week. You could potentially see him back, you know, maybe tomorrow night, the Wednesday game against Montreal. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if he plays on the weekend when they travel to Orlando, assuming everything goes has continued to go as planned.
How much do we know about Zellerjan's past when he was playing, for instance, in Mexico? Was he an injury-prone player? Because he's going to start to kind of get that tag a little bit.
Yeah, I was actually – I've thought about bringing this up to Caleb Porter a couple times, and it's a tricky topic because – you know, you don't want to be the one that labels a player that way, right? Because that can stick with guys. And I think the biggest issue in trying to identify that is he wasn't a regular guy his entire time at Tigres. So just because of the talent that they had on that roster, and obviously he's very good, so you know that kind of explains where he was on the pecking order. But you know, it's tough to say how often he was out with injuries when he wasn't playing regularly anyway. So I don't know, to answer your question. And to kind of ask either Porter or Zellerjan about that is, I think, just a tricky, you know, you got to find the right moment to bring that up. And again, if
there's
if
never going to be a right moment.
Well, but if Caleb. Again, if we were talking to these guys every day, like we usually do, those kind of questions can come up. Now we talk to them, you know, at most 3 times a week, with when the games are coming hot and fast. And so you got to get questions in that, you know, that matter. And the Zoom format doesn't help that. Sorry, I know we're going down a rabbit hole there, but it just has been tricky to kind of get normal information that we'd usually get, even just from casually standing there talking before or after interviews start. So, yeah, the information just hasn't been as plentiful this season, given the unique circumstances.
Well, so far, since he really hasn't been with us that long, and he's so much fun, I'm going to chalk it up to bad luck. I think a lot of it's just bad luck. And, it, you know, maybe, Ori, it's the way he plays. I mean, as skilled a player is that he is, he's not afraid to invite contact at all.
And other teams want to invite contact onto him because they know how good he is. It's the same thing with Darlington Nagby. I mean, looking at the New York City game, what was that, like a month and a half ago, and other games in the past, Cincinnati comes to mind as well at Nippert. You know, teams want to go after your best players. You want to be physical with them. People were physical with Darlington Nagby. They're very physical with Lucas Zellerjan, the way he plays as well. And I'm all for guys, you know, going after it every single game. That's important. This season is just so unique in that sometimes you might just have to be like, okay, maybe take a step back just because there's so many games on the docket and so little time to rest. I think there's so many factors to go into play with all the injuries that Columbus have had this season. It's still not as bad as last season, considering last season the injuries are more long-term and a lot of key players got hurt. But we've seen little injuries for a lot of players this season, and I think it comes down to a lot of factors. I think not playing for as long as they did from beginning of March to July, that's why you started seeing some injuries in MLS's back. We're starting to see that in the NFL as well. A lot of guys are getting injured in the NFL after having not practiced for a very long time.
Yeah.
I also think the match congestion is something. I think the travel doesn't help.
Yeah.
You know, what the training schedule is like, because it's hard to have a training schedule when you have a game on Saturday, then you've got to come back to Columbus on Sunday, then Monday and Tuesday is pretty much all you have to figure out what to do against Montreal, train for that game, and then Wednesday's match day. So there's so many factors, and it's just one of the things that is concerning from a player perspective, a fan perspective, really anyone's perspective, is injuries and this ridiculously weird 2020.
Well, and to that end, we're bringing in reinforcements as the crew make a deal with a man who played in New England, also for Sporting Kansas City, 31-year-old forward, Christian Nemeth, who was playing in Slovakia. I got to be honest. Maybe you guys could step up and help me out with Slovakian's top division. I don't know anything about that. But he comes with a good reputation, does he not?
Yeah, I mean, he's had quite the career, to say the least. Signed at 15 for a Budapest club over in his native Hungary. And then Liverpool saw him as an up-and-coming young talent and signed him. But he never suited up for Liverpool once for a senior game. He played for their reserve team, helped win them a reserve title in 07-08. But he went on loan a bunch of times. He's been all over the world. He's played in England and Greece and Holland and Qatar. And he had a staple season in MLS. He was a good goal scorer for Sporting Kansas City in that 2015 season where they won the U.S. Open Cup, and he scored a goal of the year against Portland that season. That was kind of his best year in MLS, and I think he's going to add some good depth at striker for Columbus. It's another option at sub for Jossy Zardes, and you know, the last remaining regular season games, maybe bring him on to score a clutch goal in the postseason, since, you know, Fernando Adi has had some injuries and also hasn't been as effective as we would have expected from him as a backup striker to Zardes. It just adds more depth. But to answer your question about the Slovakian league, not a European first division with a lot of reputation. Their best side traditionally is Maribor. You've seen them in the Champions League a couple of times, but I think he played one game over in Slovakia for the team, which is FC DAC 1904 Dunjanska Streda, which
I love. Came
in like third.
Give me a jersey. Somebody get me a jersey.
Yeah, I got an FC DAC 1904 jersey.
Is there a sponsor, like some sort of booze that you could set on fire if you had a lighter? No idea.
But he's 31.
Like the Slovakian version of Everclear or something? Yeah.
But he's 31. I think he can add to the team. I think he's looking for sort of a comeback to MLS. I think he's seen basically his most productive goal-scoring years in North America. So a good addition to Columbus. You just got to add depth. And it's a deadline day deal, so they can't get anybody from Europe now until January.
It's actually not a deadline day deal because MLS's weird rules. They can still do things. But regardless, I just quickly wanted to say that I liked this guy as a player, you know, back when he was in Kansas City the first time. And some people may remember when he came back to Kansas City, there was a lot of speculation and there were some legs to it that the Crew were interested in him. Now, obviously that was under Greg Berhalter, but Pat Onstad was on that staff. He's now higher up in the front office and involved in player scouting and whatnot. So it wouldn't surprise me if that, you know, stemmed back from previous relationships. Nemeth is also a guy who can play on the wing. He's played on the left wing before. So, you know, adds depth that not that the Crew need more wingers, but just a guy who can do a few different things.
Right. That's what I like, you know, just at this point, we just need guys that can do different things.
Yeah. Well, and this deal, just the timing of it and the type of player that you're getting, it kind of reminds me a few years ago when the Crew brought in Jack McInerney kind of late in the season. And that, you know, he was able to, I believe that was the year they went to MLS Cup. And McInerney was kind of the backup under Kai when they didn't really have a good option. And not that McInerney was great, but it just gave you another option. Different type of players, but just, you know, like Ori said, Adi's been hurt. We haven't seen Jordan Hamilton all year. This is a guy that I think they'll trust a little bit more to, you know, go out there and you know, come in for Giassi when needed or you know, hopefully score you a goal or two off the bench.
Well, obviously, he's a professional, and there's nothing wrong with that. He's 31 years old, so he's kind of starting to go off the back slope of his career, but we don't need a ton of minutes from him. We just need him to give us the right minutes in this compact schedule. And will he be in uniform tomorrow night?
No, he's got a quarantine.
Oh.
And his
Kai Kamara just showed up. They put him on a Greyhound bus, and he was here.
Yeah, he didn't come from overseas, though, I guess.
True. But shouldn't Kai Kamara be quarantined somewhere? Don't you think?
Also, shouldn't they be quarantining from him if he's coming from Europe?
Yeah, I don't know. Hey, you know what? Put him on the field. It'll scare everybody. They won't know how close to get to him. Just saying.
Valid point. Do you trust defending the guy?
Well, that's not really a valid point at all. It's just sort of an insane thing that I just said. So we do have Montreal tomorrow night. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I love this. It's like every 3 days there's a Crew game. And with everything going on in the world, it's just, oh, yeah, there's a game tonight. I'm so excited. So we're back home at Moffray Stadium. Patrick, is it still the same deal, 1,500 fans?
Yes. Despite the fact that the Browns and Bengals are going to be allowed to have more fans, the crew will remain at 1,500.
Well, I mean, the Browns are 3-1. What are you going to do? They beat the Dallas Cowboys right out loud. All right, Montreal's coming into town. There's this cluster of clubs in the Eastern Conference that are stuck, if not on 17, right around 17. These guys are desperate for points. I feel like it's been forever since we've seen them. What do we know about?
Well, I'd say one of the things – go ahead, Ori.
Oh, okay. I was just going to say the form has been poor. I'm curious to hear what you have to say, Tom. All I'll say is basically they haven't won since September 13th when they were playing in, you know, the Canada Cup, when they were all playing against each other at least 50 times. But since they've played against American teams, it just hasn't been good. But what do you got to say, Tom?
Yeah, I was going to say one of the things I noticed, you know, I kind of tried to pick up early in the season, especially with the Champions League games that Montreal were doing, was Victor Wanyama coming over formerly of Tottenham, watching him kind of join Montreal. And actually, it's kind of interesting to see the few games I've seen over the season. You know, he's been kind of used by Thierry Henry almost as a center back or a CDM, and he hasn't looked good at all. It's been one of those where – you know, you're kind of shocked at the drop off from somebody going from the Premier League to MLS and not looking good at all. But I think the adjustment that's been made by Thierry Henry, I think he's kind of had played him out of position, is moving Wanyama further forward, where I think it's a little bit more of a strength for him. So I wouldn't be surprised, you know, to see him in the midfield as opposed to a CDM or a center back more in the midfield, because I think he still has the legs underneath him to move around despite the fact that he's older. So he's been kind of an interesting player to watch. And then Boyan, the former Barcelona and Stoke player, you know, he's had an up and down career, I would say, in MLS. He's had some years that he's kind of disappeared, really hasn't made an impact, but at least early on in the season, the few matches I've watched, he seemed to have stepped up his passing. It seems to have been quicker, a little bit more rapid in terms of how he's getting it from place to place, getting the ball from place to place. So those are the two guys I would kind of see. And, you know, it's just kind of interesting to watch Thierry Henry, who's managed, you know, other places in Europe, trying to make the adjustment here to MLS, but those two players are the players I would be most interested in looking at again.
It is an interesting team, because I think, and we've talked about this with a few teams this year, like, I think they have a way that they want to play. I think they want to be similar to the crew and possess the ball and, you know, build from the back and things like that. But they just haven't found a way to do it, whether it's, you know, you don't have the personnel yet. I mean, you know, Thierry Henry is one of those guys where, obviously, a brilliant player, has had some success as a coach, I guess. I worry that he's one of those players that's too good to coach. You hear about him when he was with the Red Bulls and getting frustrated with MLS-level players just because they couldn't do the stuff that he was used to in Europe. You know, obviously, he played for Arsenal and Barcelona, you know, two of the top clubs, especially at that time. You know, I'm curious just how this works with him as a coach, when clearly these guys can't, you know, aren't at the same level that even he probably still is, despite the fact that he's, you know, well past his career. But just in terms of the way they play, I think it's you know, they want to build this culture. They want to have this idea of you know, playing this possession, you know, the in vogue type of style. But you know, you got to have the people that can do that. And, you know, it's whether you try and force that and purchase guys that fit that style, or if you try and fit what kind of the players are. They did just add Mason Toy, who may or may not play. He hasn't been ruled out, but has been hurt. He was at, I think, Minnesota right before, because he was on something we wrote about earlier this you know, a couple weeks ago. So that's a guy who could add something a little bit to them. But yeah, it's just a team that's kind of struggling to find the right identity, I think, at this point. And this is, you know, we talked about this when they played Chicago and some of these other teams that haven't really found their form yet this year. You know, the Crew's got to take advantage, especially at home, where, as we mentioned, 7-0-0.
Well, I think one advantage, if you look at their roster, they are sort of the opposite of the club we just saw, Dallas, who's done such a great job with their academy and working players up, contributors who are teenagers. Montreal's roster is really old, and this is going to catch up with them as the games just continue to go by. And here they have to come down to Columbus in a midweek. So I would certainly hope that we would endeavor to run them ragged, for lack of a better term. How do we see us going about it tactically? Do we go back to familiar looks, or what do you guys see?
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me.
They go back to something familiar. Yeah,
yeah, I think so. Go ahead, Bart. You can talk about it.
Oh, just I think, you know, when you're looking at the experiment, it just, the team looked more comfortable back once they, you know, had those two defenders. I think Artur was more comfortable there with that additional support once Aiden Morris came in. And this is a team that I think that you know, if you're Caleb Porter, you think that these are obviously points that you should take. But knowing that Zeller Ryan's going to be out, I think you slot Santos in there in that 10 position. And then, you know, look at some combination of Falashi or Aiden Morris or Sebastian Berhalter there next to Artur, and just back to that familiar 4-3-2-1.
Ari, I think that Aiden Morris gets the start. What do you think?
I think it's possible. It's not a bad shout. I do think if Alache is healthy, we might see him with Artur, but then you have to look at what the mentality is for rotation for this week. If you're talking about it from importance of a game, who's the better team Columbus is playing in this next two-game stretch, I think it's fair to say it's Orlando.
Yep.
So maybe you start Aiden Morris, give him his first MLS start with
Artur. I think he earned it.
Yeah, I think the way he played, yeah, he definitely earned it. And this is a good opportunity for him to start, considering the rest of the schedule. If you're talking about competitive matches, you know, the next worst teams that Columbus is really playing, I'm not going to say Cincinnati is not an important game. It's a rivalry game. They need to get a win at Nippert. But then after that, you know, you have Houston and D.C. and then the rest of the home game. I mean, this is the easiest home game they're going to have for the rest of the regular season, if we're talking about a team that's not performing well. No game is easy. Don't get me wrong on that. But after Montreal at home, it's New York City, Philly, and Atlanta. So start, maybe Aiden Morris, then rest up Fatai Alache and see if Nagbe's going to be available maybe for Sunday's game against Orlando, because that game in Orlando is going to be massive. I think it's also going to be a great game from an entertainment perspective.
It's weird to talk about playing Orlando and have it mean so much. Let's save picking the Montreal score until the end, then we'll just pick both games at once. So we're down there at Sunday in Orlando, a team that has never found their way until this season. Patrick, what's the difference about these guys? What makes them a real contender in the East?
Well, a few things. I think they added Nani previously, and I think he's really started to fit in with this team more. You know, that's a guy that, you know, obviously was with Manchester United, and I think people knew then, and then kind of faded away in terms of, you know, the big clubs and what he was doing in his career. So when he did come to Orlando, it looked like, you know, maybe he wasn't, you know, the greatest of additions, and he didn't play well initially, but 4 goals and 5 assists this season. So I think that's part of it. The play of Chris Mueller, who I have to imagine will be a U.S. national team call-up whenever the next opportunity presents itself, is going to happen. He's got 7 goals and 6 assists, playing kind of on the wing of their attacking three. I really liked what I saw from him at MLS's back.
I agree.
And what
he looked really good.
Yeah, and then I think Oscar Pareja, you know, took over as head coach, and that's a guy who's had a lot of success in MLS. You know, he was in charge of Dallas prior to, I think he departed a year or so ago before Luchi Gonzalez took over. So, you know, that's a guy who knows this league really well. He's both as a player and a coach, been to the playoffs, had deep runs in the playoffs. So you have a guy who, you know, at the top of your team organization is understanding of what it takes to win in MLS. And I think that's been a biggest change for a team that came into the league, as an expansion side, and just really didn't have that. They started to find, you know, what guys make sense for their roster as well with Chris Mueller and integrating Nani in the right way. You know, and, you know, similar to what we were just saying about Montreal, you know, Orlando has figured out how to play their possession style the way they want to play. So I think it's just kind of things have really started to come together. Not every expansion side is going to have the success that, you know, in Atlanta did when it first entered the league. You know, you kind of have to navigate those waters often. And, you know, Orlando's started to do that. And it's been a pretty impressive season, all things considered, for them.
Well, they've had so much success that they don't have to run Dom Dwyer out there all the time.
Yeah. Either.
So I guess that era is over. I mean, it's hard to get your head around this team being good, but they are legit. I agree with you, and especially Miller, who was really impressive during MLS's back, and he's at the perfect age. He's 24 years old. How do we, with our shorthandedness, how do we look about going about playing Orlando? Do we maybe give away some possession? Is that how we do? Do we absorb some pressure? Or how do we go about figuring out a team that's on the rise and we're just sort of kind of treading water the last few weeks?
I'm not sure. There's a few things you could do. I mean, when you mentioned maybe give up some of the possession numbers, then that makes me think, well, then you're giving Nani and Chris Mueller and anybody else who's in that attack more chances to score. So there's a few ways Caleb Porter can go about it. And thinking about something he said a couple of times to the media throughout the season and one of his philosophies, you know, I think he's one of those coaches that would rather lose 4-3 than 1-0. He wants his team to score goals, even if he's leaking. And I like that mentality in a coach from a personal perspective and my philosophy on the game. I really like that as well because, you know, the name of the game is score goals. More goals win the game. So maybe you do see that. So that way Columbus can open up a little bit more, maybe go a little bit faster on the attack. But I think the hope is that they're going to be able to get at least Alache back for that game, maybe Nagby. I don't think Zellerayan will be available for that game on Sunday. So you maybe put Pedro Santos, maybe add some speed, maybe give Boateng a start. That might not be a bad idea. I think Boateng should get some starts sooner rather than later. Maybe adds even more speed on that wing, you know, with Diaz and Etienne, you know, the amount of wingers that Columbus has. So it should be an interesting game. I'm not sure what to expect, honestly.
Yeah, Bart, how do you see this going as far as how the crew go about this if they don't have Nagby? Let's just assume he's not going to play. How do we account for this in terms of playing a really good team? Because obviously it didn't go very well when we were playing Toronto on the road.
No, and I think it is safe to assume that I can't see Nagby getting back in, and I don't think you should rush him at his age, and obviously with the prospects that this team has. I think if you're Caleb Porter, you know, I wouldn't fault him for going to Orlando here and looking at the circumstances and just trying to get a point out of it. Now that isn't necessarily what I picked, but you know, obviously this is a team that struggled on the road, and I think you know he wants to get his points, but if you say, you know, out of this week you want 4 points from Columbus, I think the easiest route for you if you're Caleb Porter is to make sure you get those 3 points Wednesday night against Montreal and just try to steal one against Orlando. And and you know, given the injuries and all the uncertainty, I don't think that's a bad plan of attack.
Tom, since we suddenly need to seemingly get the defense right, should that be a point of emphasis going into Orlando to first and foremost to make sure that we're batting down back there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's obviously been kind of weird. As we talked about earlier, you said, you know, the past couple of games we've leaked 5 goals. And before that, we had 5 for the rest of the season. It's, you know, basically it's one of those weird things where, you know, you need to have that back really solid, especially against a team like Orlando. And you're dealing with a team who's been very successful at home. And it's just kind of a scary balance, because you obviously want to make an impact further up the field, but at the same token, you know, I think that's kind of why we'll see the switch from going from this 4-1-4-1. I think you'll see two defensively minded midfielders, whether that's Morris and Artur or someone else next to Artur. I think that's going to be something you'll see in that matchup, because it will be important to make sure that there's a solid base and a platform for Columbus to be able to launch attacks up the field and hopefully get a goal, or, you know, at a minimum, keep Orlando at bay, maybe through attacking. Maybe the best form of defense is attack in this case.
Well, that could be. I really look at this Orlando match to kind of wrap that part of this up, is that I really don't have a good feel for how it's going to go. I feel like there's a range of outcomes here, and I wouldn't be shocked at like 0-0. Okay, that would be a little surprising, but 1-1, we'll say. I wouldn't be shocked at 3-2. You know, I think this one could go a lot of ways. Let's go ahead and make our picks, and we'll get out of here. Let's start with Montreal, and I'll ask you to make both your picks as I go to you. Let's go to Murph first, make your Montreal pick, and then your Orlando pick.
I think the Crew should, regardless of what the lineup looks like, I think this will be a motivated team on Wednesday, and I think that they will, you know, I don't think they're going to adjust too much. I mean, Caleb hasn't, you know, especially Giassi. You're probably going to get Pedro Santos at the attacking midfield role. You know, they may rotate the wings, but the defense seems to be pretty much locked. And the question is Elache or Nagby back in that, you know, if assuming they play the 4-2-3-1. So, you know, I think the Crew will be able to handle Montreal. I'll say 2-0 Crew. And then the Orlando game, like you said, Brian, it's a tricky one. I do like what Orlando is putting out there this year. I think they're a good side. I'll say 1-1 on that game as well.
All right.
I'm gonna say the Crew might as well jump and beat Montreal
yes.
on Wednesday. I think they'll be motivated. I think they are just too good at home. They call it the fortress for a reason. I think they'll win 2-0, regardless of the lineup, like Pat said. And then in Orlando, I'm expecting an eruption of goals.
Yes.
And I'm going to go with a thrilling 4-3 win for Columbus
wow.
on Sunday against Orlando City. I think these teams are great. This is another one of those games which you could look at as like a possible Eastern Conference final preview if the bracket turns out the way it turns out. And I think that Caleb Porter and his guys are going to be really excited for that game, because they want to play the best teams. They want to compete against the best teams. Orlando runners up and MLS is back. Haven't lost since they lost to Miami all the way back in late August. So this is a hot team. Crew, a little bit on the downside, but I think they get back into a groove against Montreal on Wednesday. And I think they get a 4-3 win in Orlando. But I've been wrong all season with basically all my picks. So.
That sounds like a Bart kind of pick. Bart, how are you going to top that?
I am going to go with Columbus.
12-0 and 13-0.
Yeah, no. I do think Crew cruises to the victory against Montreal Wednesday.
That was gross.
I wouldn't be surprised to see in some combination. I think it maybe makes sense Wednesday night to see Chris Cadden get in the lineup as a guy. You know, Harrison Offal obviously has been playing a lot.
He's
an older guy, and we saw at least in the last game. Not one of his better defensive performances.
No.
I don't think it would be a bad thing, you know, to give him a rest. But also, you know, a reminder that nobody's spot in this starting 11, maybe save Jonathan Mensah or Eloy Room, is etched there in stone. So I think Chris Cadden comes in for Columbus, and they win comfortably 3-0 against Montreal.
Does Cadden assist a Josh Williams goal?
Yeah, let's go with that. I think that, and then they have some in Brune later afterwards to celebrate.
There we go.
And then I think Crew goes down to Orlando, and I was trying to, and I was unable to. Let me see. Away, Columbus is 2-2-2 against Orlando in history, and I think they make it 3-2-2 with a 2-1 victory.
Fair enough. Thank you, Bart.
Those Tom? Are the tamest Bart picks I've ever
yeah,
heard.
Yeah, right?
Those are I set the dumb. Tone. He was scared.
Yeah.
That was the reason. I know what I'm doing. I knew Brian was going to pick me before Bart.
I also, you know, just spent time talking about how Caleb Porter should play for a draw in Orlando.
Fair so enough.
Maybe going, maybe saying, but I think it's going to be 5-0. Wasn't going to do it.
5-0.
Hey, Tom, you got some bad news for us, or how do you see it?
No, I mean, without, you know, being redundant and repeating a lot, I think, you know, Montreal is a game that the Crew have to win. I think that there's the potential for some rotation. I think Cadden is a great shout. I think that that would be great to see him in there, whether it's Morris or Berhalter in the midfield, you know, in terms of that game, you know, that would be great. I think 2-0 is a very doable win for the Crew over Montreal. And then, yeah, Orlando, I think, is a game that the players aren't going to need to get hyped up for, given the stakes that we've kind of just talked about here. You know, if Nagby can come back, that would be awesome for that match. And I think it'll be a goal fest. I think it'll be, you know, there's a lot of opportunities. There's, Orlando has a lot of players who've scored. And, if you know, so they spread the ball around. And I would imagine that game, I'm going to say that's going to be a high-scoring tie, something like 3-3, 2-2.
3-3, 2-2. All right. Well, what am I going to do here? All right. I like us big time over Montreal. I'm going to take us 4-0. And then Orlando, I'm going to say I'm going to go weird here in the opposite direction. I'm going to say Crew 1-0. And Orlando clanks 2 off the iron during the game. They're left frustrated as we walk away with a 1-0 win. How about that?
You'd hate to see that for the Orlando fan base. That would just
be the Orlando awful. Fan. Well, are they allowing people in? And Florida is like
they have been since the beginning of the season.
Yeah, Florida is like woohoo! Everyone come in, standing room only. All right. Well, that would be fun to shut them up. So how about a 1-0 win on a Josh Williams goal? All right. Please like and comment the Massive Report podcast. Only leave positive comments because we are gentle souls and we cannot stand criticism. Also, to that end, please 5 stars. Otherwise, I won't be able to live with myself. Please 5 stars. Like and comment. Seriously though, it really helps. How does it help, Patrick? Can you explain this to me? I don't.
It's an algorithm thing. So no, I can't. I just know that it helps us like show up more places on people's right. podcast apps. It, and stuff.
Especially if you're a robot, please like and comment because that will help the algorithm. Somehow.
Anyone got 100 iTunes bot accounts? Just name them Crew Fan 1000, Crew Fan 1001. Nice and simple.
Then when you're done with that, you go over and you listen to yourselves and Van Halen. God rest. Eddie Van Halen.
Rest in peace, Eddie.
A true genius. Thank you, guys. That was fun. Tom, come back again, please.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I want to see your kid next time. I don't know what's going on back there. What does he like to play with?
He's he doesn't stop running, so that's always good. All
good.
Over the place.
Get him out of the zone. Put a ball between his feet and get him out there.
Working on both feet right now. Both feet.
Fair enough. Bart, Ferrari, for Murph, and Brian. Hey, if you get a chance to listen to my radio station, CD1, I'd appreciate that. And, of course, like and comment, like and comment, like and comment, MassReport.com for all your coverage. And we'll talk to you next week here on the Mass Report Podcast.